Did you know that inside your body right now is a medicine that can effectively treat over 100 so-called untreatable diseases? Inside each one of us is the most powerful medicine ever known to man. From the time that we are born, we all have what are called adult stem cells. I prefer a more accurate term, repair stem cells, because that is what they are, that is what they do, and that is what they keep doing. Great doctors from all over the world are now using repair stem cells to save and improve lives. Heart patients who were told to go home and die are now regularly jogging uphill. The symptoms of Parkinson's patients are being reduced. Blind children are slowly gaining some sight. Autistic children are taking a step back toward normalcy. Some paralyzed patients who were told that they would never walk again are walking again. And this is merely the beginning of the greatest medical science in the history of the world. I'm Don Margolis of the Repair Stem Cell Institute, and we want you to have all of the information about this amazing field of medical self-repair. This information could just save the life of someone you love. Good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is Don Margolis with The Truth About Stem Cells. It's a two-hour show, and you're most welcome to join us. We'll give out the call-in numbers a little later, but these 2 hours are going to be split as follows. We're going to have 1 hour talking about the various kinds of stem cells and getting you the truth to you, because you're exposed to so much misinformation that we've got to step in some time and correct it for you. That's the first hour. The second hour will be some of the latest papers and science on adult stem cells. We like to call them repair stem cells, and give you whatever's happening there. Interspersed with that will be an occasional call-in, and in each half hour we have a real live heart patient who is going to tell you what they went through to get the right stem cells and to get better. First word about stem cells, no matter what you hear, there's no such thing as a cure. C-U-R-E, we never use it. What we shoot for is, no matter how sick you are, we try to get you from where you are halfway back to normal and an improved quality of life. And that happens across the board for almost all diseases, somewhere between 65 and 70% of the time. That means that 2 out of 3 people get lucky and get a lot better with the stem cells, and 1 out of 3 gets unlucky, suffers no harm, never any harm, but doesn't get lucky and get a better quality of life. Now, somebody says, gee, why should I do that? Why don't I just continue taking these pills? And the answer is, well, you've been taking those pills, and how much has it done for you? And yet to find anybody that's ever said to me, gee, the pills made me better. So that's the answer to that question. Okay. There are two classes of stem cells can be distinguished. One class is pluripotent stem cells. They can be either embryonic or induced pluripotent stem cells. They call them iPSC. We'll explain that to you a little later. You'll hear a lot more science on it. But embryonic and induced pluripotent stem cells are one kind. And multipotent stem cells, and this is a direct quote from a newspaper article, with more restricted differentiation capacities, often referred to as adult stem cells. Now, what does that mean? More restricted differentiation capacities. Well, as regular listeners know, Big Pharma doesn't like the idea of you getting treated with stem cells and stop buying drugs. Their mission, permanent mission, is to keep you sick and buying. As any analyst will tell you, curing people there is no money in curing people. There is money and keeping them alive and sick and buying, buying, buying. That is the reason this corrupt medical system in North America That's the reason the United States spends 18% of its income on medicine and medical costs, while Europe averages 10.5%. That's, when I say 10.5%, I'm talking all of Western Europe and all of Scandinavia combined. 10.5% of the national income goes to medicine. And that covers everybody, because everybody's covered in Europe. In the United States, 50 million people are not covered. What does that tell you? If you added in some of the newer countries from Eastern Europe, that number, 10.5%, would go down to 9.5%. And pretty soon, the United States will be double that figure, because big medicine runs the government. You hear people say, well, it's not approved by the FDA. Well, of course it isn't. The FDA is not an organization that cares about patients. The FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, is owned, O-W-N-E-D, and operated by pharma. Now, people say, that's ridiculous. It's the government, and the president makes his appointments, and blah, 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 blah. Not ridiculous. It's the law. In the middle 90s, pharma went from senator to senator with bags of money, and at the end of traveling from senator to senator, by 1996, the law was passed. The government is saving money by allowing pharma to pay half the cost of the FDA, and the taxpayers only have to pay the other half. But they have to pay twice as much as anybody else in the world for medicine, and they're not allowed to get the world's greatest medicine, adult stem cells, because we got to protect those profits. So let's go on briefly about embryonic stem cells and induced pluripotent stem cells. Embryonic stem cells, as our listeners know, but new people don't know, is nothing more than a hoax. There has never, ever been a chance that embryonic stem cells will treat any human being with a chronic disease. We'll name a few: heart disease, lung disease, liver disease, kidney disease, diabetes 2, MS, CP, cerebral palsy, multiple sclerosis. And that list goes on into the hundreds. They're all chronic diseases. In case you want to know what the definition of a chronic disease is, I'm going to give you the simple definition. You may or may not die of that disease if you have it, but there is no way in heck that you will die without it. It will be there on the day you die. It might not kill you. Chances are it will, but it might not. And people with chronic diseases live shorter lives. If you're a diabetic and not getting any better and not treating it well, you're going to die 10 years or more younger than the person without a chronic disease. Same goes for heart disease. Same goes for kidney disease, et cetera, et cetera. And that 10 years is a conservative estimate. Of course, if you're 70 years old, you only got 15 years left, so you're probably not going to lose 10 if you just catch diabetes when you're 73. But for the average guy, losing at least 10 years. And the reason you're going to die young is because your medical system is owned by big money, and big money wants to keep making profits, and they care not a whit whether you live or die or get better or anything else. Everything they have done in this 21st century proves that statement. So embryonic stem cells was the big hoax, which they came out with in 2004 and 2005, when it was obvious to them that adult stem cells could kill their business of shoving pills down your throat. So medical science, being the criminal activity is, puts the mafia to shame, and I say all medical scientists are crooks. Now, there might be 5 or 6% that aren't, but the crooked
medical, the crooked science known as medical science, and you're going to hear examples why, do not care a whit about your health. All they want to do is promote their careers. How do you promote a career if you're a medical doctor? Well, number one is you pretend that adult stem cells don't work and embryonic stem cells are the future. Why do pharma love embryonic stem cells? Because they know that never will they ever get to the point that they can help a patient who is now sick during that patient's lifetime. So they keep spreading these lies, and everybody you hear, everyone, CBS News 60 Minutes, the New York Times, the New England Journal of Medicine, every one of them wants to kill you so that they keep making money and sharing in all the money, because pharma is very generous and shares the enormous profits they make. How much do they make? $250 million a day. That's not sales, that's profits. $250 million a day, and they're very generous with all the people that are willing to kill patients so that they can make more money selling drugs. Let's finish off ESCs, embryonic stem cells. From 2004 to 2000 and to December 31st, 2011, 8 solid years, no major medical journal was allowed to publish anything positive about adult stem cells, and they were encouraged to print stuff about embryonic stem cells. And this garbage went on into 2010 when, of course, the FDA, owned by pharma, said, we're going to approve an embryonic clinical trial, the first one in history, and using embryonic stem cells. And I wrote an article back in 2010. An article said, it will never happen. The people who are pushing embryonic stem cells know that the clinical trial will fail, not because it won't produce any positive results, but because they will kill people, and they won't be able to hide that fact. But they said, we're going to have this clinical trial. It's going to start here, blah, blah, blah. And about 30 days before it started, the company, it was a sham company called Geron, G-E-R-O-N. They still exist, but their stock's worth about 2.5 cents now. But Geron said, well, they told the FDA, we can't do this trial. We just can't do it. And the FDA said, you got to do it. And they said, we can't. So they put it off. A year later, they were forced again to do the trial. And they started, I guess it was late in 2011, and the trial started maybe early 2012. But at the end of 6 months, of course, all of the corrupt medical schools and their hospitals joined in the trial and became members of this wonderful primary first ever embryonic clinical trial. 18 schools joined and said, we're part of this embryonic stem cell clinical trial. And 6 months went by. 6 months, 18 schools, 18 hospitals treating. How many patients do you think they signed up? No, not 100. No, not 50. No, not 25. No, not a dozen. 8 was the number. 18 hospitals, 6 months, 8 patients was all they got. And yet there's 500,000 people dying to get into them, but they had to be so careful to see that they weren't going to get cancer. And that's what they were scared of. And at the end of 6 months, they said, we can't do this anymore. And the secret word out there, and of course nobody has any way to prove it, is that somebody actually got cancer. One of the 8 got cancer. But here came the first lie. Geron says, we can't afford to do these embryonic stem cell clinical trials. And lo and behold, they quit. 3 months later, some other executive from Geron came out and said, well, we did have the money, but that's not the real reason. This is the real reason, reason number 2. And another few months went by, and a third executive from Geron came out and said, well, that wasn't the real reason either. Here's the real reason. So over about a 7-8 month period, you had three excuses why they quit the trial, but nobody other than insiders know that there's only one reason the trial could possibly be ended, and that is knowing people were getting cancer. So there's... to wrap up the embryonic stem cell thing, no matter what President Obama says, no matter what the New York Times says, no matter what you see on all the pharma-bribed blogs and websites around the Internet, embryonic stem cells will never, never, never be used to cure or even improve the lives of someone with a chronic disease. No one, no one, no one. Now, that's not to say that they'll find a way to chemically change them and they won't be embryonic stem cells anymore, but they'll still call them embryonic stem cells even if they're completely changed. And that is the end of embryonic stem cells, although you'll still see some liars out there telling you how wonderful they are. Not one human being has ever been treated, and no one with a chronic disease today will ever be treated with embryonic stem cells. So that moves us back to 2007 when the wonderful science, and I'm full of nothing but admiration about Jamie Thompson from Wisconsin, who isolated the first embryonic stem cells. And when Bush passed his program to stop embryonic stem cells, Bush was no hero to the adult stem cell team anyway, but that's another story. It was all a pharma plot to keep stem cells from ever getting into the public domain. So around the world, in Europe and in some place in South America and in Australia, the biggest place of all, the biggest fan of embryonic stem cells was in Singapore, a very rich, small country. And they, being as stupid as the rest of them to believe this garbage, threw everything into it. They got investors hundreds of millions of dollars. The government threw in hundreds of millions of dollars. And that was in 2004, 2005. And sometime around the middle of 2006, an announcement came out. It might have been 2007. It says, we can't see the end of the road. No matter what we do here, and we fired all these top scientists, including Jamie Thompson, from all over the world, and nobody's gotten anywhere. How's that possible? Everybody knows embryonic stem cells are the future. Well, they didn't. And they quit. And in 2007, Jamie Thompson came back after having visited in Asia with Japanese scientists, and they decided they were going to come up with a new concept called induced pluripotent stem cells. What that means is you got a sick patient, you take a piece of the skin off. That skin is then used to scientifically, if you want to believe it, revert those cells in that skin back to the embryonic stage. Now, you're not killing any embryos, so none of the churches are going to object. You're going to take skin and revert it back to the embryonic stage and then get stem cells to treat that patient with his own embryonic stem cells. A marvelous concept, and everybody, including me, was rooting for it. But it pretty soon became pretty obvious. You see, embryonic stem cells have the following properties, three terrible things with them. Terrible thing number one is they cause cancer. Terrible things number two is that they are rejected by the patient's immune system because it's a different DNA, and the immune system hates anything with the different DNA that's coming in, whether it's a virus, a bacteria, or an embryonic stem cell. That's the second thing, so they had to give it a lot of give the patient... if they were testing this, they had to give them a lot of drugs to suppress the immune system, thus making them more likely to get cancer. The third thing was it was incredibly expensive. Even Geron, reporting to the SEC, put a note in one of their reports that said, we cannot guarantee that these embryonic stem cells will sell because the cost of making them is extremely high, which is true. So now you have embryonic stem cells which are too high in cost to use, and they want to replace adult stem cells with those. You have causing cancer and killing people, and you have the immunosuppressive desire to kill the patient with cancer. So Jamie Thompson and his Japanese buddy came up with induced pluripotent stem cells. You take the skin, you make an embryonic stem cell out of it, and you treat the patient. Well, it hasn't happened so far. Now, that was in 07. In fact, next month, 2 months from now, it will be 6 years that these two guys have been trying, along with thousands of medical scientists around the world who are bribed not to use adult stem cells. That's pharma backs everybody who comes out with another reason to not use adult stem cells. So now all these corrupt scientists, and it's the most corrupt business, believe me, medical science is the most corrupt business, far more corrupt than the mafia, in the world. So these guys are all out there trying, and they can't get anywhere. And the worst thing that could possibly happen happened. You just heard the three things that are wrong with embryonic stem cells. So though Thompson was correct to try it, what's happened was they got all the negatives of embryonic stem cells happened to their induced pluripotent stem cells. Too expensive. Cause cancer and require immune rejection. But that's not the most interesting thing was in 2011, 4 years into their research, they found out that this process of going back in time requires billions of chemical transformations to get back all the way back to the 50 or 60 years to the embryonic stage. Well, what happened? Well, when you're doing a billion transformations and one in a billion goes wrong and creates something that isn't part of the original embryonic stem cell, and that number starts to multiply as you go along, what happens? Well, the creature you're creating with those new set of supposedly embryonic stem cells turn out to be monsters. So you're creating a monster from the guy's skin, a monster that's something like him, but not all like him. End of induced pluripotent stem cells. Well, 6 years go by and there is no patients ever being treated, and nobody's covered the price differential, nobody's covered the cancer differential. So what is pharma going to do? They can't talk about embryonic anymore because embryonic's a total failure. They can't, while adult stem cells right now have 2,000 clinical trials going on around the world or already completed, and 1,500 of them are sure successes, there isn't anybody that's dared since Geron to even try a clinical trial in embryonics. So everybody's talking about now, here comes induced pluripotent stem cells. But you ain't going to see any clinical trials on them unless they lie and call something induced pluripotent stem cells that's been chemically altered to get rid of some of these terrible functions of induced pluripotent stem cells. So, we go now to the source of embryonic stem cells and method used to generate induced pluripotent stem cells. Starts with adult skin cells. There's the risk of teratoma formation, which is cancer. You have to raise that the ethical and safety issues for the clinical use of these murderous stem cells raises safety standards. But among all stem cells, only mesenchymal stromal cells are the main seed cells used in regenerative medicine today. They come from adult stem cells. That's the end of our story for today about embryonic stem cells and induced pluripotent stem cells. Warning, pharma is now picking up the excitement about induced pluripotent stem cells, and doctors are telling their patients, hey, just wait for the induced pluripotent stem cells. At best, and that ain't going to happen, but at best, you're talking 2025. Repeat, at best, you're talking 2025, but it ain't going to happen. Okay, Mr. Engineer, as you know, and we know, the corrupt science of medicine says that adult stem cells do not work more than 2, 3, 4 months when you're treating a heart patient. So every week we bring you two heart patients who were treated more than 2, 3, 4 months and ask them about their experience. We have a fellow by the name of Ed Horton with us. He's from the USA, East Coast. Mr. Engineer, can you bring along Mr. Horton? We have us with us right now, Mr. Ed Horton, who is one of the early patients who back in the old days, and that's before 2010, got his stem cells for his heart. Ed, can you remember what your physical condition was before the stem cells and what you weren't able to do?
Yes. Before the stem cells, I had a ejection fraction of about 30%, and it continued to go down to, eventually was down to about 19%. I struggled going up any kind of stairs. Usually by the afternoon, I was ready to take a nap. I was very tired all the time, out of breath. Wasn't very many things I could do. I didn't know what, where I was headed with that.
So, Ed, can you tell us how you found stem cells? What year that was?
It was in 2010. I started going online and looking at stem cells and different doctors that treated people, and went to talk to a doctor in Florida that did his patients over in the Dominican Republic.
Would that have been Dr. Zanos Grecos?
Yes, that was Mr. Grecos.
Well, Dr. Grecos was one of the pioneers. What happened was that in those days the company's name was Theravite, and they had a policy that any patient who crossed the Pacific to get treated in Bangkok was allowed to bring his cardiologist with him, and one of our patients did. He had a restaurant in southern Florida, and Dr. Grecos and he were good friends, so he brought Dr. Grecos with him, and he was fascinated by the system and ultimately became part of it. What did Dr. Grecos tell you when you came to him for stem cells? Was he very positive? Did he take any tests? How did he do it back in those days?
Back then, he had me come down and talk to him and told him that they were averaging anywhere from 10 to 20% improvement on the patients that they did with the ejection fraction. And, there was no guarantees with anybody, but he said that most of his patients, and he gave me names of people to call and talk to, and I went to a couple of his seminars and decided that I was going to try the stem cells. It looked like a very good option, and had my blood drawn and went to the Dominican to have it in stem cells injected into my heart muscle.
To clarify for our listeners, back in those days, the company Theravite was one of the very few companies to use the patient's blood as a source for its stem cells. What they would do would be to take roughly a half a pint of the patient's blood, like a typical Red Cross donation, pack it up in an ice pack, and send it across the ocean to Israel and the lab that converted the blood to stem cells. And that took about a week, and the patient was told exactly when to fly down to the Dominican Republic and get ready for his stem cells. And I'm sure that's what you did. And in from Israel flew the stem cells. What happened then? Do you remember the treatment?
Yes, I went in for my treatment. I guess it probably took maybe an hour and a half. I was a little drugged up, but I could remember pretty much everything. And they did a catheterization, and I went up and injected my stem cells, and then took me out of the room and put me in a recovery room where I stayed overnight as they watched me to make sure everything was okay. Within a day or two, I was up and going.
And you went one night in the hospital, and then did you spend another night in the hotel before you went home?
Yes. Actually, what I did is I spent a couple nights more in the hotel. After that, I stayed there and actually visited a little bit of the island when I was there.
And get it. They had some good beach time there if you were up to it. And you did a little sightseeing. Not bad.
I did.
Then you went. Yep. Then you went back home to South Carolina.
I went back home to South Carolina at that time. Sure did.
And tell us what happened. If you can remember, did you have any? Usually, the heart patients with this treatment would get an increase in energy in the first 6 weeks. Did that happen to you?
Oh, yes. It was a gradual, but I noticed that I'd look back and notice things that I couldn't do that I was doing, you know, a few weeks after that. You know, the nap that I was taking every day because I was tired began where I didn't need the nap, and sleep in the afternoon, and within a few months I could definitely tell I was breathing easier when I was going up and down stairs. And
well, we'll explain to our patients why that is after this interview is over, what actually happens during those first few months, and I can easily say that Ed was a average patient, and how he got better was more or less what most people do. Now let's shift forward to year 2013. Now 3 years down the road, plus a little bit, and tell us how things are with your heart today.
Well, today, just actually 2 months ago, I went back to my regular cardiologist that I had here in Columbia, South Carolina, and they did a echo, and he come out after the echo and said that my ejection fraction, he said, was 45 to 50 percent, and being 50 to 55 was normal. And he was, I guess, maybe a little surprised that I was doing so good over the last couple of years. The year before, I being around 35 to 40, so it increased even more the following year.
Good. And you were very few limitations on your physical activities as before?
Yeah, I'm back to playing basketball, and I'm 53 years old and playing basketball in the 90-degree heat outside, and have no problem up and down stairs, and doing everything that I once did before the issue with my heart.
There must be something wrong with this connection. I apologize. You know, my connection said that this 55-year-old guy was out playing basketball in South Carolina heat. Is that what you said?
Yes, Don. That's what I said. On Sundays,
are you playing with the boys or what? Who are you playing with?
A group of guys that we play basketball with for over 20 years that we play a couple times a week, and on Sundays we play outside in the heat and have no issues of playing ball outside, running up and down
the court. My goodness. Well, I guess we don't have to ask you then what you think of the stem cells. You've more or less told us. Thank you for your time, Mr. Horton. If you don't mind, I'll be back to you in 6 to 9 months or so to see if everything's still okay.
Yes, that would be great.
Okay. Pleasure talking with Ed Horton of South Carolina. This is Don Margolis signing off.
Have you been told repair stem cells are untested, unsafe, ineffective, and even detrimental? Not true. In fact, the safety and efficacy of repair stem cells have been proven in over 1,500 clinical trials in the United States and around the world. Repair stem cells are currently used by doctors worldwide to help people suffering from over 100 serious and so-called untreatable medical conditions. Learn the truth about stem cells with Don Margolis, chairman and founder of the Repair Stem Cell Institute, the world's only stem cell patient advocacy company, helping you and your loved ones to make educated choices and connect with the world's finest stem cell doctors on BBS Radio.
Hi, everybody. We're back. It's 4:35 Pacific, 6:35 Eastern. Here's the call-in numbers if you want to call in. Toll-free in North America, 1-888-429-5471. Outside North America, 1-530-413-9537. We promised you at the end of that Ed Horton interview to explain what happens in those first few months. All stem cells that are used today are called adult stem cells, and they come either... In almost all cases, they come from the body of the patient, and there's many, many places in the body it could come from, or the umbilical cords or placenta of newborn healthy babies. And there's a couple others that aren't used enough to mention right now. So we'll take a look at what happens to a heart patient when the stem cells are put in. All stem cells, all the ones that we use, have the ability to divide into two. And they called it, when one stem cell becomes two, they call the two daughter stem cells. But there's something very unusual about these cells compared to other cells. For example, talk about your own skin cells. Look at a piece of skin. There's a tiniest piece of skin. There's a million cells in there. Those cells are constantly dividing and becoming two. But when they're dividing, when a skin cell divides, or it becomes two skin cells. That's all. It becomes two skin cells, and then later those two skin cells become four skin cells continuously. So that way you're constantly being renewed. And it is said that some parts of the body get renewed every 60 days and some parts get renewed every year or so. And that's true. But what happens to stem cells? Well, let's take a platoon of stem cells. The doctor puts them into a place, like he can put them into your heart, and usually he puts them where the dead tissue is, and he wants to replace that dead tissue with live tissue. Or he puts them into the myocardium, which is the little sac that holds the heart, But he likes to put them near the dead tissue so that when they drop into the heart, it becomes, it has the ability to change dead to live, or replace dead with live. Okay, now you have these small amount, I call it a platoon of stem cells, and they immediately start dividing, and they get two daughter cells. Only they're not two daughter stem cells, that wouldn't be any helpful. What they are is one of the daughters is another stem cell, and the other daughter is a heart tissue cell. So, the very first doubling, you get one heart tissue cell. And every one of those stem cells, and there could be 5 million of them there, they're going to divide within a matter of hours or days and become 5 million stem cells and 5 million heart cells. Now, if they do this quickly enough, the number of stem cells, of course, keep growing. But more importantly, the number of tissue cells to replace dead tissue keeps growing. And so, at the end of some period of time, and I'll use a month as an example, that little platoon has grown into a battalion. And the battalion ultimately turns into a regiment, and that turns into a division, and that turns into an army. And you get an army of stem cells that's big enough to conquer any problem in the heart, and it replaces as much dead tissue as it can find. And lo and behold, the heart, which has been working too hard because most of it, half of it was dead or a quarter of it was dead and had to work too hard to pump the blood, now doesn't have to work so hard anymore. And despite the fact that they've added a lot of tissues, the heart becomes smaller and more efficient. So that's how they work in the early days. And thanks to Ed Horton for that wonderful interview. I've been talking to heart patients since 2005. That's 8 years. And since the spring of 2005. And I've spoken to literally hundreds of them, easily thousands of them in 8 years, and of whom several hundred have gone for stem cells. What I have found out, and the reason I'm such a cynic about medicine, is that I talk to the people who have been hurt most of all by this mafia replacement business called American medicine. And I knew it back in 06. I had a relative, a former research scientist, an MD, who had just about retirement age, and he was a dyed-in-the-wool medical scientist, and he was a good researcher, and he loved the research. And back in the 60s, when he was doing his research, it was a semi-honest business, and he and his team were guys who were looking to create something good for patients. Well, in a conversation with him in 2006, I said to him, it's amazing how many of my incoming patients hate their cardiologist. And he says, what do you mean? I said, I'm pretty sure, I haven't taken an account yet, but I'm pretty sure it's one out of three or worse. And one-third of them or worse. And he says, oh, you mean you got three patients and one of them doesn't like his doctor? And I said, no, it's more than that. He says, I don't believe it. I said, well, do you want to talk to them for yourself? He says, well, I'm not going to talk to one guy. I said, okay, I'll find out how many it is. So I went through my records, and there were 20 possible patients on my books at the time. And eight of them had given me the stories of how they hate their cardiologists, a couple of them how they almost died at the hands of their incompetent cardiologist, and how they and other guys say they gave me this drug and it damn near killed me. I had to leave the doctor because he told me to keep taking it. I mean, things like that. Anyway, so I called back my relative, and I said, hey, doc, I got eight out of the 20. That's 40%, not one third. And they all want to talk to you. I have their numbers. Do you want to call them, or do you want me to give them your number so they can talk to you? He hung up. He refused to hear that, and to this day, he thinks I'm lying about it. Well, you might too, but I hadn't planned on using any of those names, although I've had a couple of them, as you know, on interview, but excuse me. I got a letter from a patient, a heart patient, who was not from the United States. That's all I'll say. Hi, I have congestive heart failure and atrial fibrillation, severe mitral valve regurgitation, cardiomyopathy, been treated by my cardiologist all these years with mixed bag of pills. Regardless of my pleas to be proactive, I have begged for adult stem cell therapy, an IVAD, a pacemaker, implanted device, etc., etc., while I was moderate, so therefore possible. To every request, I have been told anything would be basically how I understood to keep me comfortable while I die. I now have, at the age of 55, gone to about stage 3 heart disease and have now lost the window of opportunity to fix, change the outcome of my terminal disease. My doctor told me I don't see you as ever needing a heart transplant. This is a verbatim quote from a couple of weeks ago. Quite simply means the doctor figures and assumes that I will simply fall over dead, suffering a sudden death while faithfully taking my copious handfuls of pills, faithfully as I have for the last 16 years, while trusting that the almighty medical professionals have my best interest at heart. As you can see, I am desperate. You are my last hope. Please help if you can. Very sincerely, XYZ. Here's what I'm going to tell this patient. First of all, stem cells cannot help severe mitral valve regurgitation. It can help, certainly, congestive heart failure, atrial fibrillation, cardiomyopathy, can help all those. And I will give you a dozen patients you can talk to by telephone, and you can ask them how they do. But unfortunately, even the sharpest, best doctor will say to you, you will have to fix the mitral valve regurgitation with surgery first. After that, we'll be happy to give you all the stem cells you want. So that's what I'm going to tell this patient. And just in case you're a heart patient, I hope some of this has helped you. Now I'm going to get into finish up the subject. We finished up embryonic stem cells. Now, this is from a published paper that has been published about embryonic stem cells, and some of it is from Wikipedia, which, of course, if it's wrong, can be easily changed. They always have committees to change them. But, quote, the major concern with the potential clinical application of iPSCs, induced pluripotent stem cells, is their propensity to form tumors. You think? Much the same as embryonic stem cells, iPSCs readily form teratomas when injected into immunodeficient mice. Thank God they're not putting it into humans yet, or ever. Teratoma formation is considered a major obstacle to stem cell-based regenerative medicine by the FDA. Now, so since adult stem cells never cause cancer, why doesn't the FDA approve adult stem cells if the major obstacle to stem cell-based regenerative medicine is teratoma formation? The answer is that sentence may or may not be true, but it's nothing for the reason that adult stem cells aren't approved. The only reason adult stem cells aren't approved is because the FDA is owned by pharma, and pharma doesn't want their business crushed. So their profits are much, 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 much more important than your life. Second paragraph. Since iPSCs can only be produced with a high efficiency at this time using modifications. Quote, using modifications. In other words, they can't produce them without using modifications. They're so hard, and as we told you before, they're going to be very expensive if they ever learn how to produce them. They are generally predicted to be less safe and more tumorigenic than human embryonic stem cells. All the genes that have been shown to promote induced pluripotent stem cell formation have also been linked to cancer in one way or another. Again, all the genes that have been shown to promote iPSC formation have also been linked to cancer in one way or another. Some of the genes are known oncogenes, including members of the MYC family. While omitting MIC announced for iPSC formation, the efficiency is reduced up to 100 times. So you can reduce this cancer-forming thing by spending 100 times as much energy in making the damn things as is needed for not taking them out. So why am I so hot about induced pluripotent stem cells? Well, as you hear from me saying all the time, everything you read about in the paper is fixed. Everything is nothing but propaganda, and everything you read, especially about stem cells, is a lie. Now, in the past year, when embryonic stem cells, as you now know, collapsed as a possibility, and even Obama can't make it happen, they decided they have to go after iPSC as the reason to put all their public's attention on iPSCs, which are never going to work, so that people won't demand adult stem cells. And the people listen to and foolishly believe everything anybody tells them, especially their doctors. So, how to make induced pluripotent stem cells replace embryonic stem cells in the public's minds is a wonderful thing? Easy. You rig the Nobel Committee. Really easy. So Jamie Thompson's partner, who is out there in Tokyo or somewhere in Japan, fiddling around unsuccessfully with induced pluripotent stem cells, the Nobel Prize Committee gives him the prize this year, splits it with the guy who originally discovered embryonic stem cells. So you take useless embryonic stem cells and give half of the rigged Nobel Prize to this guy. Nice doctor, did his job, found embryonic stem cells. Now he's a hero for finding a stem cell that will never help you or anybody else. Then the other guy splits the clinical trial, splits the Nobel Prize with him, the Japanese guy, gets half the Nobel Prize for doing nothing but trying unsuccessfully to make it possible to take human skin cells and come back with embryonic stem cells that treat people. And they, 7 years now, 6 years now, and they are absolutely nowhere. But they got the Nobel Prize because it's very easy for pharma to hand $50 million or $20 million to the Nobel Committee and say, hey, we want you to praise embryonic stem cells, which can never hurt our business, and induced pluripotent stem cells, which can never hurt our business. And every blog in the world will pick it up, and every crooked newspaper will write it, and every medical journal will scream, wonderful, 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 this Japanese know-nothing got a prize from the Nobel Committee. So that is why I am telling you the truth, that you're going to see nothing but, for the next few months, you're not going to see much about embryonics anymore, and you see nothing about adult stem cells, nothing positive. But you will see in all the rigged propaganda newspapers you read, and all the rigged medical journals, and all the rigged magazines, and rigged television stations like CBS News, 60 Minutes, you're going to see nothing. I wonder how they're going to get off embryonic stem cells and switch over to iPSC. We'll see the next time they come out and tell you lies that adult stem cells don't work. Now, another paragraph from a paper. A non-genetic method of producing iPSCs has been demonstrated using recombinant proteins, but its efficiency was quite low. Refinements to this methodology may lead to the production of safer iPSCs. So they found the treatment that they thought would lead to safer iPSCs, but its efficiency was quite low. They weren't producing enough of them. Oh, but it may lead to it. As long as they stay positive, they'll get printed. An important area for future studies is directly testing iPSC tumorigenicity. That means testing the induced pluripotent stem cells for the ability to create cancer. Such studies are crucial since iPSCs not only form teratoma, but also mice derived from iPSCs have a high incidence of death from cancer itself. In other words, when the iPSC did not form a teratoma and created from those embryos mice, those mice die from a malignant cancer. A recent paper came out in the journal Stem Cells. You won't find this in a New England journal. You won't find this in Nature, and you won't find this in Science. They take their directions from pharma and are not allowed to print anything negative. But the journal Stem Cells indicating that iPS cells are far more tumorigenic than embryonic stem cells. Let me say that again, sweetheart. Don't forget this as you're reading this garbage about induced pluripotent stem cells. Tumorigenic means cancer-producing. A recent paper came out in the journal Stem Cells indicating that induced pluripotent stem cells are far more tumorigenic than embryonic stem cells, supporting the notion that iPSC's safety is a serious concern. Duh, you think? Anyway, we have another nice interview coming now. We're near the top of the hour, but we're going to go right to this interview. This is a lady who was in really bad shape. Now, not as in bad shape as the letter I just read you from outside the United States, but this lady was in some kind of bad shape. And she is so good at determining and explaining to you what she went through and trying to do it in record time. I decided not to ask her a question because everything she was telling was so spot on. So when you see her talking for six straight minutes, you know it's not an accident. She's got something to tell you about what she went through, et cetera, et cetera. Her name is Teresa. Mr. Engineer, can you find Teresa's interview? This is Don Margolis again. We're having an interview with a very nice lady from Florida named Teresa Hamrick. And Teresa's never been interviewed on this show, so let's welcome her. Teresa, can you tell us what your heart was like before you came in for stem cells?
Yes, I can. I had a heart attack in July of 2011, the second since I had turned 50, and I blew out the entire septal wall and anterior wall of my heart, in effect, because the LAD was totally occluded, and they chose to do nothing about that for almost 5 days. They unclogged the 95% occluded RCA, and put more stents in there, but they didn't do anything to the LAD until my cardiologist got back to town about 5 days later. And so then
That ought to teach you a lesson, sweetheart. Don't have any heart attacks when your cardiologist is out of town.
I didn't know she was away in the Keys getting married. Who knew? Anyway, so she got back, took one look at me as I laid there in ICU with a blood pressure of 60 over 30, only because of the dopamine drip. They took me back to the cath lab, and they unclogged the LAD and in the process perforated it, so they had to put end-to-end stents to kind of patch the hole. And then a few days later, they sent me home. And prior to the heart attack, I had come back from a heart attack 5 years earlier and gotten my ejection fraction, which is the efficiency of the pumping of your heart, back up to pushing 70% at the echo 3 months prior to this heart attack. When I went home from the hospital, my EF was about 30% and continued to drop over the next 6 months. until I ended up with a pacemaker defibrillator put in. And the heart attack was the end of July. The pacemaker defibrillator was by November 16th, and by December 17th, my next echo, my ejection fraction was down to 17%. So I wasn't doing too well. I couldn't walk 25 feet without being extremely short of breath, and obviously could not work. Just I was wiped out and getting worse. They were talking heart transplant, and I said, I don't tolerate drugs, the drugs you've got me on. What makes you think I can tolerate additional drugs? The answer to that is no. I've been doing research since I've been out, gotten hooked up with Repair Stem Cells website and Don Margolis, and sent my records off to, you sent them to several physicians and gave me some options. I ended up choosing the Dominican Republic. They actually chose me, Dr. Liriano and Rosario down in Santiago, Dominican Republic, said yes, and I flew out on February 7th from Tallahassee and had the procedure done where they took 250 cc's of bone marrow out of my right hip, spun it down, re-injected the stem cells, 56 injections in my left ventricle, back to the hotel and flew home. So I flew out of Tallahassee on a Monday. I was home Thursday night, and over the course of the next month, I started feeling some better. By the time, and my first echo, I did an echo at 1 month, and my EF was about the same, I'd say about 20%. And then my echo 3 months out, my EF was back, was climbing, and I could walk. I was up to, at 3 months out, while prior to this I couldn't walk 25 feet, I was walking a mile and a half a day. I get up every morning and walk, because exercise, diet, and trying to stress your heart is the only way to get the muscle back. So, and they noted on my echocardiogram that the aneurysm that they had seen back in December, I was developing an aneurysm at the apex of my heart from the way it was beating so funky. That aneurysm was gone. They couldn't find it. And they've been looking real hard on every echo ever since. And while my cardiologist was real skeptical, she said that I didn't need to worry about that because the aneurysm was healed. That's what the stem cells did for me. I almost dropped my teeth when she said that.
This is a new one. I mean, I pushed through well over 500 patients one way or another for heart treatments, we see them. You know, we see them clear up congestive heart failure, repair dead heart tissue, make detours so that the blood gets to the heart. But this is the first time I heard of a cured aneurysm.
It made it go away. It had gotten a centimeter bigger. From November to December, and after the stem cell, it diminished and went away. Yeah.
Well, that's wonderful.
They sent me for a second opinion at Mayo in the meantime while I'm slowly healing from all this, and I was able to get on the stress a treadmill and do a stress test and come out with normal findings on the stress test. Go figure. Obviously, I was
no surprise.
I'd like to
change the subject here a little bit. Let's ask what your current diet is like.
My current ejection fraction is 35 plus or minus 5% is what the echo from this month says. I am able to walk my mile and a half every morning. I run out of steam a little, but most days I do awesome. But I've had a few days where, you know, it kind of comes and goes. But I'm doing awesome. I look good. Everybody looks at me and says, you don't have heart disease. You're too pink. And I'm like, yeah. From the last time they saw me with blue lips, I'm not shocked. Yeah. But I'm doing well. I really am.
I'd like to know what your current diet is.
Oh, my current diet? My current diet is kind of heart healthy. I eat lots of veggies, and I eat red meat. I eat fish a couple times a week, salmon or tuna. But I've never given up red meat because I tend to need that. I eat chicken. I low fat. I don't do fake sugar. I'm allergic to Splenda and fake sugar, so it's real sugar when I have sugar. I eat pretty much normally. More of a Mediterranean diet, I would say. Lots of fish and meat and veggies and fruit. Not a lot of desserts, but I don't deny myself the desserts. I'll have a bite or two, and then I just don't have a taste for sweets anymore, which is good.
Okay, what would your advice be to somebody who never had a heart attack and has a mild kind of heart disease? Let's say they have angina. Mm-hmm. And just say somebody who has angina, never had a heart attack, and mm-hmm. feels fairly good, but complains they can't run as far as they used to or as fast as they used to, but otherwise they feel they're doing fine. What would your advice be to them if it was a friend of yours?
I'd encourage them to look into the stem cell treatment, mainly because the reason I went for it was because it couldn't hurt and it might help. There were no promises or guarantees, but it helped tremendously. It increased the collateral circulation in my heart. So the reason you have angina is the fact that you don't have enough oxygen and blood going to the heart. And so you get, obviously something's getting occluded.
That's correct. That's correct.
So it couldn't hurt. It might help that if I were them, I'd be looking into it. Because all I'm reading that, you know, the stem cells would help tremendously. They gave me energy and, my congestive heart failure, my cardiomyopathy right after the heart attack, and I went from no cardiomyopathy to stage four cardiomyopathy before I went for the stem cells, and now all of my records indicate I'm back at level one cardiomyopathy, so obviously it improved me down from a level four back to a level one. So I do have some chronic congestive heart failure because I still have parts of my heart that don't move at all. The septal wall and the atrial wall don't move, but everything else is a whole lot more efficient and pumping more effectively, obviously, to get my EF back up to 35%. And to
okay.
I'm not on any
Thank
drugs.
You.
I take it. Okay.
We're out of time, Teresa. Thank you for the complete description. We have you've covered so many different points that several heart patients are going to relate to you, either for one point or another, and that's good. And we'll be back to you in about 6 months to see if you're still improving. And by the way, congratulations. Don't be afraid to eat red meat. Nothing wrong with red meat. It's as long as you don't eat fried foods and excess of sugar and too much bread products, it can't be all bad. And thanks again, Teresa Hamrick of Tallahassee, Florida. Mr. Engineer?
Since 2005, Don Margulis has been quietly earning the title of the voice of stem cell science for his tireless advocacy of the safety and efficacy of repair stem cells to help patients recover from more than 100 different diseases and medical conditions, including the big three chronic killers in the U.S., cancer, diabetes, and heart disease. Learn the truth about stem cells with Don Margulis, chairman and founder of the Repair Stem Cell Institute, the world's only stem cell patient advocacy company, helping you and your loved ones to make educated choices and connect with the world's finest stem cell doctors on BBS Radio.
Thank you, Teresa, and thank you, Mr. Engineer, for a little break there. It is now 7 minutes after 5 Pacific and 7 minutes after 8. 8 minutes after 8 Eastern. Okay, new subject. We have I have an amusing stem cell story to tell you. When when you've read about, of course, many times, the ability to store stem cells for future use. And for instance, when a baby's born, if you want to save their umbilical cord stem cells, there are many, many places that will store them for you for a price. But we have somebody in Europe that there's a new company, Cellectis, C-E-L-L-E-C-T-I-S, and it specializes in genome engineering and stem cell treatment. Claiming to be a world first, the service has been developed by a stem cell bank, SCL, a French genome technology company, and it was launched in Switzerland, Dubai, and Singapore, and the U.S. 2 months ago. What it does, it involves taking cells from a small sample of the skin under local anesthetic at a dermatologist and shipping them to the lab and rebooting them into induced pluripotent stem cells. Okay? I repeat, it's very expensive. And being a corporation, you know, they're free to lie all they want. Nobody bothers them, especially if they're doing something that pharma likes. But he then, the chief executive says, talk about the Japanese scientist broke a paradigm of scientists. He discovered that you can take any cell of the body, put a cocktail of things inside it, and then forgets the state it is in and comes back to the first stage of life, 9 months before birth. These cells have the potentiality to give any kind of tissue to your organism. Well, that's true. They do have the potentiality to give any kind of tissue to your organism. You freeze time at the second a sample is taken, and the cells won't age after this moment. Probably true. Probably true that the cells won't age. But it is not probably true that they will not. What makes anybody think that after all you've learned about what really happens to induced pluripotent stem cells, that you want to create your own pluripotent stem cells so that you can get cancer later if you need it? I don't know. But the truth is that the public is not allowed to know about cancer and stem cells. And the only time they're allowed to know about stem cells, and you're going to think I'm making this up, but it really happened. They are so instructed to stretch every point possible to keep the public off adult stem cells that this true event happened, and you can judge for yourself whether you want to trust anything you read in any paper, any magazine, and especially any medical journal. The year, I believe, was 2011. And there was a article in an Israeli medical magazine, an internet medical magazine. It was called Israel 21. And it was an article by a group of Israeli scientists who published their results of creating, according to the so-called book, How to Create iPSCs, and they created iPSCs. And their article was the truth. It says, we created them, they caused cancer. We created them, it cost a fortune. But even worse, and this is the first time anybody had ever said it. I say it now, but they said it first. They create monsters. In other words, when you're doing this billions of times, sooner or later there's going to be an error. And that error creates something that is not the patient, So when he said it's not his own stem cells, it's that of a made-up monster that is not him. And that happens, in addition to the cancer, that happens when you produce or try to produce embryonic stem cells. Well, these honest Israeli scientists published this article, and they printed it word for word in this Israel 21 magazine. But Israel 21 magazine is bribed by pharma. And then, and all that means pharma either advertises in there and they don't have to, or they give them backing in some way or another to never print anything that would hurt pharma. And putting this bad news about pharma, pharma's pet, its new pet, it hadn't yet become the new pet because embryonics hadn't been destroyed yet in 2011. But pharma came up with the answer. And this headline to this article, remember, you're talking about adult skin cells, which they tried to make iPSPs. How can they turn that into something, since it's not positive about iPSCs, how do you turn it into a negative about the real stem cells that are their hated competition? Very simple. You just tell one of the crooks who's writing the headlines to use this headline. And the crook uses this headline, and nobody, you know, these are doctors who get this mainly, and a lot of patients. So not one person in Israel, not one, caught it, and I caught it. It didn't say adult skin cells. It said adult stem cells cause cancer. That was the headline. Adult stem cells cause cancer. Well, adult stem cells were never mentioned by the honest Israeli scientists. It's only the crook who wrote the headline. And that headline made its way around the world. So every time somebody wrote an article about how adult skin cells trying to go to iPSC got the headline, adult stem cells cause cancer. And nobody's allowed to correct that. I wrote to two publications under comments, and they never printed my comments. You're not allowed to correct it. Pharma says it. That's the friggin' Bible. You're not allowed to. The people have to read it and die. That's you, sucker. Read it and die, because any information you read in any major newspaper about stem cells is over 50% to be misinformation propaganda. So everybody that read this article thought that adult stem cells cause cancer. And patients read this and they say, well, I was thinking about getting adult stem cells for my lung or my heart or my multiple sclerosis, but it causes cancer. I can't risk that. So I'll keep taking these wonderful pills my doctor gives me, and I keep getting worse, and I'm going to die 12 years too young. That is pharma taking good care of you. All right, let's change to a different recent article that appeared in America. And this is another thing you have to be careful about. You have to be careful about the fact that they have lied to you so many times, and they know that you don't know anything and know that you believe anything. They tell you whatever they want to tell you and know that most people believe it. So what they're telling most people now, of course not you who listen to this show, but when somebody does something in America, a scientist makes an announcement, for the first time ever, blah, 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 stem cells are used to treat multiple sclerosis. Well, now that's been going on for more than 5 years, but to say it, you can say it, if you're an American scientist, nobody is going to be allowed to attack that statement. It's a lie. It is not the first time ever, but nobody's allowed to challenge it. For the first time ever, XYZ University has proven that stem cells can possibly treat multiple sclerosis. Never mind that thousands of people have been treated with stem cells around the world for multiple sclerosis. If you're a stupid American who believes everything you read, you're going to think, hey, XYZ University just found this. My cousin Minnie has multiple sclerosis. I think I'm going to tell her to call XYZ University, who isn't a bit interested in her sickness and is a bit interested in treating her. It's just looking for more money so they can research some more. Anyway, here's a similar story, except it's from one of the very few legitimate stem cell treatment centers in America. And that's why we're giving it to you and telling you that if you get a chance to visit with these people, it's something you should take advantage of. The headline says, adult stem cells can save failing hearts, colon, researchers. So, researchers saying in the United States that adult stem cells can save failing hearts? I haven't ever seen that before. All I've heard from United States of America is lies from Duke University and University of Pennsylvania big shots that it doesn't work. Anyway, tell that to Teresa Hamrick. But here's the article. Former Master Sergeant Barry Brown was teaching physical education to Miami high school students when he realized there was something terribly wrong. Super fit and just 38, the newly retired Air Force fitness instructor suddenly couldn't walk a quarter mile without experiencing searing pain in his back. He said, I had served in Iraq and Afghanistan. I assumed I was in the best shape of my life. It didn't make sense. Well, he was stunned when tests showed he had advanced heart disease and needed a triple bypass. But that's not all. He was also suffering from congestive heart failure and was told that in the future, he'll need a heart transplant. Nothing wrong with the cardiologist telling him that. It's the truth. Since you can't get what works, adult stem cells, the only thing, if you're hopelessly sick, is a transplant. He would be eligible, being a vet and young, he would be eligible. Older people would not be. Smokers would not be. Fat people would not be. Over 60 would not be. But he would be. I was devastated, said Sergeant. I was a father with two young children. He underwent the bypass operation, but during the surgery, his heart also received injections of his own stem cells as part of a clinical trial at the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine. Now, let me say again, the University of Miami is the most honest clinical trial for heart disease school in America. Okay? It's run by the best doctor, Joshua Hare, and the only ones that are close that I'm sure about is Texas Heart Institute and a couple in Arizona that know what they're doing. There's a Dr. Dibb in Arizona. But Joshua Hare is at the top of the list. And if you can get, if you're a heart patient and you can get somehow, contact the University of Miami and find out if you're eligible for a Joshua Hare-run clinical trial, by all means, grab it. Okay. Continuing the article, currently 6 million people in the United States suffer from heart failure. The condition kills an estimated 53,000 Americans each year. Now, the study inviting Sergeant Brown is still being ready for scientific journal publication, so the results are not yet known. They're known. Not a chance in hell that this clinical trial didn't result in 80% success. 80% of the patients plus got better. Why? Why not the 65 to 70 that happens out in the real world? Because Joshua Hare is a great clinical trial director, and he knows you cannot risk taking a dangerous patient in, a patient who's in trouble, because if that patient happens to die, you got to spend a year proving that it wasn't the stem cells that killed them. So nobody running a clinical trial takes anybody that has any danger of dying during the clinical trial. Now, you can't prevent it 100%, but you do your best. So that's why the patients are in better shape than the patients taken by stem cell clinics who most of them would never qualify for any clinical trial, especially we treat a lot of people over 65 and few clinical trials allow heart patients over 65. And there's, for every clinical trial, there's usually 10 things, positive questions you have to answer yes, and 10 negative questions you have to answer no. And getting by those 20 questions is tough even for younger, healthy people. So, Joshua Hare, believe me, is going to produce a successful and publish a successful clinical trial. To me, it's not a secret. Now, here's what has been released. Stem cells injected into damaged hearts. And remember, we were telling you the doctors like to put the stem cells where the damage is, where the tissues were dead. Were able over time to reduce scar tissue by 33%. So that meant that on average, if you have, let's say, 30% of your heart is dead and 70% is live and working like heck to keep you alive, you're going to be down from 30 to 20% on average if you get stem cells. Now, that's a big average. Some of the stem cell patients get 100% of their damage removed. Some get 0% removed. And it's all the luck of the draw. There's sure to be some scientific information about it. We only know of one thing, and that is after your stem cell treatment, you damn well better go on a proper diet. Proper exercise is determined by your cardiologist, and avoid excessive alcohol, and lose weight if you need to. That gives the stem cells the best chance. But still, some aren't lucky and won't get it. So, that study involved 30 men at University of Miami and Johns Hopkins, also found that the stem cells rejuvenated healthy heart tissue, and remodeled the shape of the weakened heart to look more like a healthy heart. In many cases, such improvements can mean the difference between life and death. Now, this was news to me, that I know that they try to go after the dead tissue, but of course stem cells are going to leak over to the live tissue, and they find that they rejuvenate the healthy heart tissue, which is in trouble, and wonder of wonders, they do the job they're supposed to do. Okay, last item on to those of you who are new to stem cells, we're going to go over some definitions for you. Stem cells are immature master cells within the body that have the capability to transform themselves into different types of stem cells within the body. In other words, in the case of the heart patient, the stem cell divides in two, becomes one stem cell and one heart tissue, and that's the way the heart gets better. Hare says, no embryonic stem cells are ever used, sidestepping the ethical issue, so there's no ethical issues. In Brown's treatment, the stem cells were taken from his bone marrow clean and injected into 10 places in his heart during his bypass. Wonderful. This kind of cutting-edge treatment is not yet available in the U.S. outside of trials. Unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, as successful as Dr. Joshua Hare is being, he thinks he's going to get approvals by 2015. I know he's not. I know they cannot afford to give up billions of dollars in useless profits that are useful to them and useless to the patients for the incredible amount of heart drugs that cure symptoms and do nothing for the patient's heart condition. Okay, this article is terrific, and I find very few that I ever approve of, but although the study involving Brown took place in Miami, there are stem cell trials for a variety of diseases throughout the country. To find such research, go to clinicaltrials.gov. On this website run by the U.S. National Institutes of Health, you'll be able to learn the location and other details of ongoing stem cell studies. For instance, a search of stem cells in heart elicited the names of several studies, including Brown's, which is now finished and being ready for publication. Okay, there's a lot more to this article, but we've had enough on this article. We're going to now switch to our last heart patient, a wonderful gentleman by the name of Ray, also from Florida, who went through heck. Golly, this is no coincidence. This is another guy who got nailed by his cardiologist before he was supposed to go 4 months ago for stem cells and got nailed and something happened to him and he went to the hospital. Next thing you know, they wouldn't let him go get stem cells. I don't know anything about that story, but he did go get his stem cells 2 weeks ago and he wanted to talk about it now. So, Mr. Engineer, if you can put Ray Kopchick of Florida up for our people, our last heart patient of the day, go right ahead. Well, here we are talking to a Florida patient for a change. Ha ha. This is Ray Kopchick, and Ray's a Floridian. And the good news is that he is almost exactly 2 weeks from his stem cell treatment. And he went to Dr. Vigna in Argentina. And Ray, could you explain to our listeners the condition your heart was in before you went to Argentina?
My heart problem happens to be heart failure. And obviously with heart failure, you have your problems with energy and with durability. And mine happened to be down around the 20 mark for ejection fraction. So I wasn't putting out as much of the blood that was necessary for the rest of my body. And, of course, I felt it as a result of that.
Okay, that's not atypical. That sounds kind of common to me. Now, did you have an angina problem? I mean, a vascular problem. You had a second problem. You want to discuss that?
Well, the second problem was a knee problem, and they injected some of the stem cells into the knee. And even at this time, I am feeling some improvement within the knee, and it's not even 2 weeks yet.
Okay, that's pretty common. That is a good, competent stem cell doctor, and Dr. Vigna is by profession a cardiologist and a hematologist, but he knows that when you got bad knee problems, the last thing you want to do is get a knee operation. They're the most unsuccessful things in surgery, and knees and hips. So,
well, I've been trying to put it off as much as I can.
Well, who can blame you? But let's see if what Dr. Vigna's needle does you any good. So You arrive in Buenos Aires, and
yes.
you go through customs and immigration, and what's waiting for you when you get out?
Well, when I got out of the airport, there was a lovely young gal who was waiting for me with my name on a piece of paper, and it was my contact, who was an excellent translator. And she stayed with us through everything so that we would understand what was going on and we would understand all the foreign language that was being used.
And what was her name?
Her name was Julieta Sanchez. Lovely gal.
Okay.
Very competent.
Dr. Vigna has two of them, and though they are not related, they're identical twins in the sense that not only is their English excellent and their translations beyond excellent, but they are medical professionals, and they know what to do when something comes up that needs attention.
I was very impressed with them.
Okay, so you got down, they drove you to from Buenos Aires to San Nicolas, and you had the driver, I imagine, was Luis?
Yeah, she, there was a driver who was waiting for us at the curbside at the airport, and we, of course, jumped into the car, and it was a little bit of a long trip after our travels, but it went fine, and we arrived there a couple hours later.
And did Juliet check you into the hotel?
Yes, Juliet checked us into the hotel, and then she took me down to the hospital where they ran some preliminary tests. And I stayed overnight in the hospital in preparation for the procedure the next day.
So you arrived on one day and had the procedure the next day. So the day you arrived was test day, and
right.
And you stayed there overnight, and they were able to check out your numbers overnight in preparation. So I imagine sometime the next morning,
yes.
met a Dr. Seslowski, the fellow who took the bone marrow, took the needle to your bone marrow.
Yeah, they gave me a sedative, and I guess there was some amnesia effect to it because I just don't remember much beyond when they started giving me a local anesthetic for the bone marrow procedure.
Okay. Then after that, you probably went back to your room for a little while?
Yeah, I woke up and everything was done. They took me back to my room, and it was just a matter of just relaxing and letting them see me the following day so that we could make sure that everything was okay. And fortunately, everything was okay. I was very happy with everything. And it was just a matter of getting back home after that.
So did you ever get to meet Dr. Vigna? I mean, you slept through the procedure, and he does the procedure, so did you get to meet him personally?
Oh, yeah, he came into the room when I first got there, introduced himself, and we had a little chat about what was facing me at that point, and he also made it a point to stop by before we left. So it was very pleasant. He spoke English, and not as fluently, of course, as Julieta, but he spoke enough English so that you could certainly find out what was going on and you could understand him.
Okay. So then you did you spend a couple of days in Argentina after you left the San Nicolas?
Well, No, I didn't. It was winter time, and the weather being winter, I didn't particularly want to run around in the cold weather. So
it was that cold, huh?
We just went straight home, yeah.
Okay. Well, you're a Floridian, so that anything's cold to you.
That's right.
Now, you do know that anybody that's gets stem cells through our company gets a free 6-month diet program from one of America's leading nutritionists, Dr. Brawley, who is a regular on the show. Are you aware of that?
Yes, you had mentioned it during some of our conversations.
Yes, and Dr. Brawley will be calling you next week. Actually, you'll get an email from his office, and they'll suggest a time for the call, and you'll pick out a time for the call, and he'll call you, ask you a lot of questions about your condition, and he'll then take another week to 10 days, and he'll put together a book for you, and that book will have at least 10 pages in it of diet, lifestyle, and exercise for you, and he'll be available to you for the whole 6 months if you have any questions. And I would like to take your time right now and explain to you and to everybody else, stem cells are not a magic bullet. Stem cells are a repair part of your body and capable of repairing, but they can't do it by themselves. They have to have you helping with a proper lifestyle. If you're going to keep smoking, or if you're going to be more than just a social drinker, or you're going to eat the wrong kinds of foods, and boy, in the United States, virtually every food is the wrong kind of food, your stem cells will have a reduced chance of helping you. Now, some people get away with murder no matter what, and they can cheat and do everything wrong and still do okay. But most people need to help their stem cells, and that's what we hope you'll do. And that's why we're happy to pay for the diet counsel of Dr. Brawley. And Dr. Brawley will be back on the show in a couple of weeks for those of you who like to listen to him. So thanks a lot, Mr. Ray Kopchick of Florida, and hope the knee stays strong. I hope you're able to walk better, and we'll be checking up on you as we do all new patients every 2 weeks.
I appreciate that.
And we'll on top of that, we'll call you back in 4 to 6 months to see how you're progressing. Thank you for
Great.
Your time. Ray Kopchick hey. Of Florida. Bye-bye.
Have you been told repair stem cells are untested, unsafe, ineffective, and even detrimental? Not true. In fact, the safety and efficacy of repair stem cells have been proven in over 1,500 clinical trials in the United States and around the world. Repair stem cells are currently used by doctors worldwide to help people suffering from over 100 serious and so-called untreatable medical conditions. Learn the truth about stem cells with Don Margolis, chairman and founder of the Repair Stem Cell Institute, the world's only stem cell patient advocacy company, helping you and your loved ones to make educated choices and connect with the world's finest stem cell doctors on BBS Radio.
Well, this is our final half hour, except there's only 20 minutes left, and we're going to teach you a brand new lesson this time. The enemies of stem cells at work are drug companies, and the reason they are enemies is because they make a lot of money for killing you. Now, a lot of people say I'm nuts. I says, how dare you say that? The law would blah, 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 blah. Well, let me explain something to you that you're not going to believe, but it's true, and I've done it. There's a word called iatrogenic, I-A-T-R-O-G-E-N-I-C. Iatrogenic means death by medicine. That means people who die as a result of medicine they're taking, or as a result of treatment by their doctors, or as a result of treatment by their hospitals. Anything that is caused by a medical professional is called iatrogenic. Now, they don't admit to much, these liars, that, and they never, you never read about this in the New York Times or the LA Times or the Montreal Gazette or whatever. But in America, every year, 1 million people are murdered by professional medicine. Their doctors and their hospitals are their biggest. Their doctors, the hospitals, and the drug companies are the main culprits. Nothing comes close. And when you hear that cancer is the number one killer, heart disease is the number one killer, it's a lie. They're not allowed to publish the truth. Iatrogenics is far in excess. Far. It's almost more than cancer and heart combined. Cancer and heart are roughly 600,000 each, very roughly. Iatrogenic is in excess of 1.1 million deaths a year. Like I said, that doesn't even include some which they can't possibly prove, but they know died from medical treatments. Now, back when I first got started in this, and we're talking 2003, 2004, I was learning that how the criminals who run drug companies work. Now, you're not going to believe this, but back when pharma took over the FDA, and that was 17 years ago, pharma took over the FDA, they had a system which they said, we're going to hide the clinical trial data legally. Now, what that meant was, if a drug killed you and there was no proof anywhere that it, why it killed you, you had to sue the drug company who was selling this murderous drug, and I underline murderous, they knew it was murderous, and you suckers were taking them. And taking this drug, you had to, now, here they are making $1 billion a year on this drug and $5 billion a year on that drug, and here comes a lawsuit, and you and your $1.98 law firm against a $1 billion law firm working for pharma, and their job was very simple. Just delay as long as possible so they can make several billions before the lawsuit stops them. That was the program in the United States of America and indeed most of the world. You want to find out what killed you? Sorry, Mrs. Widow. We ain't going to let you know because we run your government, not you. Now, and by 2010, that scenario apparently couldn't be tolerated. So after much debate with the crooks on one side with their billions of dollars bribing all kinds of big shot doctors to say, no, we don't need to change this law. Let's keep killing 1 million people a year. And the public, of course, you never knew anything about it because New York Times never printed anything like that. The New England Journal of Medicine would sooner take a bullet than print anything like that. No, nothing that any of the crooks in your medical system would ever let you know that this was the way it was. I mean, you should have got a hint when whatever that V drug was that killed 50,000 people, and the FDA tried to stop Vioxx, it was, try to stop Lancet, a British medical journal, from publishing that. The FDA tried to keep you from knowing it, that 50 million had already been killed by Vioxx with the full knowledge of Merck. But Merck owned the FDA, so they're allowed to kill you. And just in case, they've recently passed a law that nobody in any corporation who kills people intentionally can be charged with murder, as so many state attorneys general, have tried to do, never got to it. These murderers just murder people, and now the United States Constitution has been changed. It said you can't charge this son of a bitch with murder. You can sue the corporation, ha ha ha, to your $1.98 law firm against their $1 billion law firm, and you got no chance, none. And finally they said, look, you're suing us for $2 million. We'll offer you $20,000. Now, you can take the $20,000 now because your grandchildren, by the time the case comes down, they'll take our offer for $10,000 in 10 years. So that's what people are forced to do. That's the drug system. That's the legal system. You got no chance, and you still take all the drugs your doctor tells you to take. Anyway, in 2010 came a small step toward decency. And it begun by the European Medicines Agency, EMA, provided access to physicians and the public to the data from clinical trials that drug manufacturers use to gain marketing approval for new prescription medicines in Europe. The program was hailed by American and European researchers. Indeed, by researchers around the world as a major step toward improving drug therapy. Now, you have two companies. AbbVie is the manufacturer of Humira, the number one selling medication in the world, with projected sales of $10 billion in 2013. And Intermune is the manufacturer of a pulmonary fibrosis drug, Esbriet, that has recently been approved in Europe. And the drug costs $40,000 per year for desperate patients who are never told about the negative information. Why? Are their doctors crooked? No. The doctors may or may not be. But they don't know either. And so EMA says anybody that wants the information can get it. And these two companies, AbbVie and Intermune, have filed a lawsuit against the EMA in an effort to block access to vital safety information about the serious risks the companies know that these drugs pose. Their motive is simple and self-serving. They are attempting to protect their profit by concealing their product's hazard. Nothing wrong, different than what goes on in America today when only the FDA knows the secrets about what's wrong with drugs, and your doctor isn't allowed to know. Repeat, your doctor isn't allowed to know. And frankly, if the truth be told, if he did know, it wouldn't stop him from earning commissions and giving you poisonous drugs. But anyway, you won't hear about this anywhere else. So I'm telling you, if you're going to take Humira, know that there's information out there that the drug companies are using their billion-dollar law firm to stop from getting in your doctor's hands or in your hands. And the pulmonary fibrosis drug, Esbriet, also, you can't find, you, your doctor can't find the information. Their profits count. Your life means shit to them. Do you understand that? So if you take Humira and you take Esbriet, then you deserve what happens to you. That is the drug industry, the medical profession in the free world. That is the truth. And that's the truth about stem cells, the reason that they don't want stem cells, and they don't ever tell you the truth. They just don't want them because their profits are all that matters, and everybody in the system is against you and for profits. That's not just the drug companies, not just the medical machine manufacturers, not just the insurance companies, not just the HMOs, but everybody in the system. Over 90% of the medical doctors, they're part of the crooked system because they don't get anywhere unless they play the game. And your regular doctor who writes these prescriptions doesn't give a damn what the negative effects of them are. In fact, you probably don't know this, but recently a trial was done in Southern California which asked patients what their doctors did when they tried to tell them about side effects. And the answer is their doctors didn't give a damn about the side effects. They wouldn't pay attention to them. 500 people, it was in Southern California, a university in Southern California, maybe it was Scripps, I forget. It was in 2009. Did a test. They wanted to talk. They lined up 1,000 patients to talk about side effects of drugs. And they got 1,000 people to sign up, and they had this question and answer thing done. They wanted to get a reasonable answer to the question, do doctors care about side effects? And what they got, they published a paper only halfway through because they couldn't stand it anymore. Every patient they came in and they asked the question was screaming at them about how horrible their doctors were. They wouldn't pay attention, didn't give a damn. And I am not kidding. This article was published in 08 or 09 in Southern California by a university saying that the patients knew that their doctors didn't give a damn about the side effects that were killing them. So that is that answer. And the last thing we want to discuss is something called opioids. What is the leading cause of accidental death in the United States in America? Okay. What is the leading cause of accidental death in America? Up until this century, it was, of course, automobiles. But automobiles are a lot safer than they used to be. The roads are a lot safer. They're more crowded. And drunk drivers get arrested more than before. So the accidental death rate has been going down for about 30 years, nibble by nibble. And guess what passed them for the number one cause of accidental death? And that is poisoning. Now, what kind of poisoning are we talking about? Well, we're talking about drug overdoses. Oh, well, you mean crack and heroin? No, not crack and heroin. The majority of drug overdoses do not involve illegal drugs like cocaine, but rather legal prescription drugs like oxycodone and other opioids. These legal drugs were responsible for 15,000 deaths in 2008 versus 4,000 deaths in 1999. That is, in 9 years, the deaths went up 375%. The Centers for Disease Control, the CDC in Atlanta, has now classified prescription drug abuse as an epidemic. That means the doctors have contributed to an epidemic of overdose deaths and addiction by overprescribing opioids. For most of us, most doctors, it was a desire to treat pain more compassionately. To bring this public health crisis, well, this is a doctor writing this, to bring this public health crisis under control, doctors must provide more cautiously. No, it wasn't. This is Dr. Andrew Kalodny, who wrote this very good article. He's president of Physicians for Responsible Opioids, an opioid is a painkiller, responsible for opioid prescriptions. And he's a chairman of the Department of Psychiatry at Maimonides Medical Center in New York. Dr. Kalodny, I respect you, but you're hiding the truth. Nothing is more responsible for this epidemic than psychiatrists doubling, tripling, quadrupling their prescriptions for opioids so as to make thousands of dollars more per year in prescriptions for mostly useless or harmless medication. So, with full respect to the intent of Dr. Andrew Kalodny, it is out of malicious intent. It's not the desire to treat pain more compassionately that led to overprescribing. It's to the fact that when you were a kid and a young doctor and developing your proper medical attitude, Dr. Kalodny, and I don't deny that for a second, when you were a kid, you did not have the opportunity to make $50,000 a year prescribing drugs as psychiatrists do today. Just by prescribing, I'm not talking about charges, I'm talking about prescribing. So that's it. That's it for today. We'll be back in 1 week. And thank you for listening. Don Margolis saying, have a great weekend, everybody. Bye-bye.
If you or a loved one suffers from a chronic disease, I'm here to tell you that you don't have to suffer, as the medical establishment may suggest. You definitely can have a better quality of life and prolong your years without chemicals, scalpels, radiation, anesthesia, and pills, and more pills. I'm Don Margolis, and I started the Repair Stem Cell Institute to make sure you have all the information you need about how this amazing therapy can help you. Visit our website, repairstemcells.org, and learn how stem cells can help improve your life. If you feel they are the best treatment path for you, simply fill out our no-obligation treatment request form and let us personally guide you through the process of finding the best stem cell doctors and centers in the world. At the Repair Stem Cell Institute, we are proud to say that we have already improved the lives of hundreds of patients. Contact us now and take an important first step toward improving your own life or the life of a loved one.